This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning. Golly, Saturday morning, and I'm back here in the Midwest working out of the Huntley studio after spending a couple of weeks, 3 weeks in Arizona visiting doctors at Mayo and everything working out well there. So good to be back in the Midwest because in the desert, they haven't had a drop of rain in 97 days, so things are a little dry. And the heat setting records this early in the summer season at 110 degrees when we flew away on Wednesday or on Thursday. And quite a different weather scene as far as the irrigation taking place. They're harvesting hay, and they're also getting ready to harvest a cotton crop in Arizona. So that's the difference in agriculture, depending on what part of the country you're in at the moment. But their concern is wildfires because of the extreme dry weather. And so many of the wildfires that take place are started by humans, not by lightning. And they keep working on that, warning people not to do any kind of campfires or cooking fires outside because of the extreme dry weather. So anyway, that's our Western weather story. We're back in the Midwest, and yes, pretty good thunders. Well, one thunderclap in Huntley overnight, and that was about it, but some rain indeed. So this morning we're going to be talking markets, and Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor will be talking to Max about that. We'll get another BASF crop update, and we're going to be talking to Tim Andreessen of the CME Group about what's happening in the agricultural futures options markets. So all of that coming up when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's been way too long since we checked in with Tim Andreessen, who is the Managing Director of Agricultural Products at the CME Group. And I want to begin, Tim, by saying welcome, and then let's talk about the kind of a record year you're having. Talk to me about that.
Well, Orion, first of all, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk. You know, this has been quite a year. We kind of all thought that this was going to be a year that was going to be kind of slow, but, you know, we've had some global weather challenges. We've had some weather challenges in, you know, more the southwest part of the United States. And we've had a lot of talk about trade or not trade, and that's really created a lot of volatility in the marketplace. You know, we had, interesting enough, we had on April 4th the largest day in terms of volume we've ever had. We traded, you know, over 3 million futures and options. And here's something that was really interesting about that is, you know, we trade, you know, overnight as well. When we came in before the day session started here, we had traded 780,000 contracts. And so what that's telling you is the span of international usage of our contracts, where we had people in Asia and people in Europe responding to market events, you know, before the traditional business day here in the United States.
And am I looking at a number that says you've broken the 2 million contract number in corn futures open interest?
You are. June 6th, we were over 2 million contracts of open interest. And, you know, that really matters a lot to us because open interest are people that are putting positions on. It's not just trade. It's people that are using our market to lay off risk or to take on risk, whichever the case may be. And so we really get excited when we see strong open interest because, you know, that's an indicator of people using the market for, you know, for what you know, for risk management.
How much of the increased use in the futures options market is coming because of the uncertainty of the future of trade agreements and tariffs and everything else?
It would be really hard to pull it out because, you know, if you look at what's happened, it seems like about every other week we have some, you know, different news event. I mean, certainly I think that creates a significant backdrop. You know, as I said earlier, we kind of went into this year thinking it was going to be pretty quiet, and then we start to get some fundamentals going on in South America. And, you know, it's not just the fundamentals that are driving it, as well it is the geopolitical uncertainty around trade and, you know, the implications of, you know, what our trade policy with China is going to be.
The agricultural volume number that I look at through May shows agricultural volume up 22% from May a year ago?
Yes. That is correct. You know, it's again, it's when you have markets with so much uncertainty in them that, you know, you're seeing a lot of trade. It's, you know, if you look at, if you're a producer and, you know, you, let's just look at soybeans. I mean, since the beginning of the year, we've gone, you know, from, you know, the high nines to the middle tens to, you know, we're back down in the high nines again, and we've chopped around in between, so there's been so much uncertainty that this has been, you know, the kind of market where you're seeing a lot of people managing risk and are saying, hey, listen, this is more than ever, this is when I need effective risk management tools.
I want to go for a moment and take you outside the numbers and talk a little bit about your perception of the market. I frankly have been very surprised at the turnaround in the wheat market. It seemed like a year ago we had a glut of wheat in the world and the prices were down. But did that all disappear?
Well, I'm not the the fundamentalist. You've got a lot smarter guys about the market. But, you know, clearly if you look at both Chicago wheat and Kansas City wheat from, you know, where we ended last year to where we are, you know, right now, we've seen a very solid upward trend in the marketplace. And, you know, it's adjusted up and down. But, you know, you look at Kansas City wheat, which, you know, in December was trading, you know, 440, 450 on the July contract, and now you're in the 540s. So,
right.
I mean, that's been quite a drive higher, and you're seeing a very similar pattern in the, you know, in the Chicago wheat contract as well. And I would kind of point out that, you know, that is one of the things that we're particularly proud about is the fact that we've seen such strong growth and liquidity in Kansas City futures, you know, along with what we're seeing in Chicago futures as well.
Well, when I came to town back in 1960, we basically traded wheat and corn and soybeans at the Board of Trade, butter and eggs at the Mercantile Exchange. But my, that has changed so dramatically, particularly globally. How many markets are trading futures and options on the planet these days?
Well, there's a lot of different markets out there. Some are fairly small and niche and, you know, very localized. If you look at agricultural products, you know, we still continue to be the benchmark in most of those products. But to your point, there's becoming more and more need for regional products. I'll give you a great example. If we look at where the world is really growing, particularly in wheat and corn, is the Black Sea region. And, you know, last year we launched a Black Sea wheat contract, a Black Sea corn contract. And, you know, the Black Sea wheat contract, it pales in comparison to Chicago and Kansas City. But still, you know, we've got, you know, we've traded 36,000 contracts since it launched. We've got an open interest of 20,000. And in terms of new contracts, that's a pretty strongly growing contract. And what's interesting to us is, you know, historically, these things start off really slow, and it's really hard to attract a good cross-section of participants, particularly in offshore contracts. But, man, we've seen such a broad range of participation in this particular contract one of the really interesting things is there is we also have an Australian wheat contract, which is still fairly small, but we're seeing global traders who are arbitraging between these two contracts. So, you know, on our exchange today, you literally can trade the difference between the Black Sea wheat market, the Australian wheat market, and the U.S. wheat market. And, you know, if you're a global wheat trader and you're looking at the various balance sheets and production areas, that really has a lot of flexibility for you as a risk manager.
One of the markets I'm interested in catching up with, because I'm not current on it at the moment, but didn't China start a market in Dalian, and what's happening with that?
So the Dalian Exchange has been there for a while, and they trade domestic Chinese prices.
Okay.
And, it certainly is a viable market if you're, you know, a hedger in China. It doesn't reflect global supply and demand. It, like many of these other contracts, is a regional market that is very much focused on regional prices.
And the other big change, of course, in the agricultural commodity trading is there was a time when traders in Chicago could sleep all night. But now they have to be up almost 24 hours, don't they?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting point, because there's a lot of folks that say, well, you know, the business day is from 8 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night. And, you know, if you live in Chicago, it is. And if you live in Sydney, Australia, those hours are a little different. And if you live in Paris, those hours are a little different. And if you live in Kiev, those hours are a little different. So, you know, what we've had to do is to look at the fact that we are a global marketplace for global market participants. And so our business day is not what it used to be, when predominantly this was an exchange that, you know, only reflected the U.S. market. It's now become much more internationalized and having to provide that sort of flexibility to our global customers.
Let's come closer to home, and let me talk about your education program that has just improved so greatly. And one of the areas that's growing is with young people. Are you going to make the county fair and the state fair circuit again this year?
Yes, we are. As a matter of fact, I think you and I may bump into each other at the Illinois State Fair this year.
Right.
We continue to support, you know, through our educational efforts, working with 4-H. And, you know, we're going to be our commodity carnival, which we've talked about in the past, which is a program designed for younger kids to understand some of the challenges of livestock production and marketing in particular. We're going to be at 8 state fairs, 120 county fairs, and, you know, this is the 6th year that we've been doing this with 4-H. It's something that we think is really fantastic. And I got to tell you, you know, when you and I think about the state fair, the county fair, we tend to think about, you know, the country people that are going to be there. But understand, there's a lot of city people that come to the fair. And in a lot of ways, this is really about helping those kids that come to the fair understand what production agriculture is all about and what the risks are in production agriculture.
Well, you know, for the time I have been at WGN in Chicago, which goes back to 1960, one of my main concerns has been to get city folks, non-farm consumers, to learn more about where their food comes from and how it gets there. So I'm delighted to see the Chicago Mercantile CME Group doing what it's doing in the way of education. So I tell you what, we'll share a corn dog and an elephant ear at the Illinois State Fair and any other fairs we can get to, okay?
And Orion, I'm happy to buy.
Okay, I'll take you up on that. A visit with Tim Andreessen. He is the Managing Director of Agricultural Products with the CME Group. Here with us on the Saturday Morning Show. All right, we're at 28 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. Interesting thing happening in North Carolina, a major hog-producing state in the U.S. North Carolina legislators this week finalized tougher restrictions on neighbors of hog farms seeking to sue for damages because of odor and other nuisance problems coming from larger scale livestock operations. State Senate in North Carolina agreed Thursday night by a 32-9 vote to accept House changes to legislation spurred on by the agribusiness industry following the results of the first of nearly two dozen lawsuits filed against pork producers. You may remember earlier this spring, Smithfield Foods hit with a nearly $51 million verdict. Now, that was cut to about $3 million because of state limits on punitive damages. But language within a wide-ranging farm bill would all but block other neighbors from suing the operations in the future. And farmers in North Carolina have packed the legislative building galleries this week supporting the change. The bill now heads to Democratic Governor Roy Cooper. He hasn't said yet whether he'll veto it, sign it, or let it become law without his signature. So we'll continue to watch that event in North Carolina. And thank you very much, Roger. At 25 minutes before 6 o'clock, between now and then, Max Armstrong will stop by with a couple of reports. One, the weekly crop condition reports around the Midwest, and the other one, a look at market activity in light of all that's going on with trade agreements and no trade agreements and retaliation and all that sort of thing in the world of agricultural trade. So stay with us for that here on 720 WGN Chicago, where we say welcome to Samuelson Says. It's sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. And of course, I am Orion Samuelson, this morning talking about one of my favorite times of the year. If you're looking for an easy way to keep your toilet bowls rust-free, I have the answer. Rust Guard is the in-tank toilet bowl cleaner that protects against rust and hard water stains with every flush. And Rust Guard is safe to use on plumbing and septic systems, and it will not harm pets. That's Rust Guard. Check us out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. With the arrival of summer, we come into one of my favorite times of the year, county fair and state fair time of the year, the opportunity for 4-H'ers and FFAers and other exhibitors to go into the show ring and the project ring at county and state fairs. I call it the World Series and the Super Bowl for 4-H and FFA members, because after a year of hard work on their supervised agricultural experience or their 4-H projects, it's finally time for judging and the opportunity to have a blue ribbon when the judges at the county or state fair make their way through the exhibit area. I want to talk, though, about those of you in the livestock show ring, because over the years we've seen some bad things happen, and I want to make sure that all of you, parents, members, advisors, and project leaders are on the same page. It is important to follow the rules of the exhibitors in the judging ring, because I don't want you to break them. I don't even want you to bend them. Follow the rules to the letter to avoid some of the embarrassing situations that we've had in the show ring over the past couple of decades. That applies to project leaders, to FFA advisors, to mom and dad, and to you, the exhibitor. After all, this is about sportsmanship. I understand the big dollars at the auction for a grand champion are enticing, but it's a learning program. It's an educational program, and it's a program that needs to follow the rules. So please follow those rules so that I don't have to talk about embarrassing activities in the show ring. And to those of you who are going to the county and state fair and are wanting to pick a fight with the livestock exhibitors because of, quote, mistreatment of their animals, lay off. These kids are working to make a better world and to make it a positive world. And instead of criticizing them for the practice of taking animals into the show ring, praise them for what they're doing to provide all of us with a better quality supply of food. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks, and we'll look forward to seeing many of you at county and state fairs this year. And that's one other note. Support that fair in your community. Volunteers make county fairs and state fairs work. It's still one of the greatest parts of Americana, going to the county fair or the state fair. So enjoy very much. At 20 minutes before 6 o'clock, Max Armstrong is standing by with his weekly look at crop conditions, and he'll share that with us when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
To get an update on crops, how things are looking out in the fields this weekend, let's check in with Jack Marshall from BASF. Jack, we dumped a lot of water into some of our farm fields across the heartland here in just the past few days. What are you hearing from the producers you work with? What have you seen in terms of that heavy rain that occurred in a fairly widespread area?
Yeah, so much of the state got, I've heard reports from anywhere from an inch to upwards of six over the last week. So in some areas, that was really good. We were running into some dry spots. So in those areas, growers are really happy. Their crops are set up for, you know, set up with the water requirements they're going to need going into the grain season. And in other areas, you know, we're draining that water away. The crop's still looking good, and the weeds, you know, weeds are still being controlled.
Yeah, one farmer friend of mine in deep southern Indiana sent me a photograph the other day. He had a tractor hooked up to a pump, and he was pumping 9,000 gallons a minute out of his fields. They had really received some excessive rain. While it was too much of a good thing, as you point out, there were some growers very pleased to get some moisture.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say that at least in my territory specifically, we have more farmers in the group that needed the rain than growers in the group that didn't need the rain.
Well, what about applications of herbicide here at this stage of the game? How are we doing in terms of weed control?
We're doing really well with weed control with the herbicides that went out in the last 2 weeks. You know, our retail partners did a really good job, and grower applied products did a really good job of making sure we're keeping weeds controlled. We're wrapping up the herbicide application season. This is kind of the final push we have for soybean herbicides to make sure that we get things on in a timely manner, so we're staying in accordance to label, but ultimately making sure that we're getting the best weed control possible.
What about adding residual herbicide at this stage of the game? Benefits to adding that?
So we still have great benefits for adding a residual herbicide. To me, it doesn't really matter at what stage of the game you're thinking about applying a herbicide. It needs to be, but we need to have a residual out there with it, because we still have another 2 or 3 weeks before some of these fields get to canopy, and we're going to be off-label at that point to make any what I'm going to call rescue applications. So it's going to be really critical, especially at this point, to add that residual herbicide so we make sure we stay weed-free until that crop canopy closes.
Scouting is important all the time, isn't it?
Yes, it is really important, especially at this stage in the game, because it'll give you an idea for what we can do next year to modify the program. If our program worked really well, great. Let's think about what we're if we're going to do that again. But if we had some areas where we didn't see the results we expected, you know, how are we going to change what we're doing and do that differently so we get better results? And now is the perfect time to get out there and look, so you can actually see the weeds and see where they're at and kind of identify problem spots.
This heat after the moisture of a few days ago will really bring the crop along, and I trust when there is a weed problem, it will really bring those along too, won't it?
Yeah, when the crop's growing fast, the weeds are growing faster, Max.
That's always the way it is, yeah. Thank you so much, Jack. It's great to talk to you. We appreciate it.
Yep, thank you, Max.
Jack Marshall joining us, Technical Service Representative for BASF.
It is 13 minutes before 6 o'clock. And time to talk about the market activity in agricultural products and crops. And this week, Max Armstrong sat down in the studio with Dale Dirkholz, the market analyst for AgriVisor, and they talked about missed opportunities.
Well, we missed the opportunity. We look back over the past few days, watch those charts. We look at where we were and now where we are. And I think a lot of farmers are wondering, will I get another chance?
I don't think the game's totally over. But, you know, as we're recording this, we're really right ahead of announcements to come out of Washington, whether we get tariffs put on Chinese goods or not. And that's been part of the mix here in the market this week after the USDA crop report was out, just this wholesale fear about trade.
But there was also a significant rain, too much in some spots. That rain event last weekend, Saturday through Monday, I mean, it dumped right on the I-74 corridor. Again, too much in some spots, but
you'd rather
that was a factor too, wasn't it?
You would rather have water than not have water. And yeah, it was a big play coming into the beginning of the week because we had really good widespread rains back over the weekend that caught a lot of the drier areas, whether you're in Iowa or Illinois. Yeah, some missed. You know, Missouri didn't get much out of it, some parts in southern Iowa or western Illinois. But still, big areas got rain and laid it down at a point in time where they were really starting to need rain because some of these places hadn't had good moisture in maybe 8 weeks.
Yeah, it was a critical rain. It was certainly needed, as you point out.
Oh, not without a doubt.
And there are some analysts saying, hey, the train has left the station here.
Yeah, maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. As far as the crop is concerned, you know, that we don't know. Because a lot of people tend to forget, you know, years when I can go back in like 1974, 1980, 1983. The one we had in, I think it was 2003, where we had really some late season issues with a little dryness and a little heat. The ones back in the 80s, pretty severe. So, you know, there's still a story to be told, a tale to be told on how good the crops might be. Certainly we aren't going to have an 88 or a 2012 type crop, no doubt about that. But where we're at now, corn in particular, even if we go back to something like average, let's say 170 bushel crop, you potentially tighten those carry out up numbers pretty severely and really argue prices ought to be higher.
When that supply demand report came out, you weren't so bearish on it?
No, the S&D numbers that we had really were kind of muted. A lot of people going into the report from the USDA were fearful that the USDA might try to massage in some impact from trade issues themselves. And because there's still so much unknown on that front, the USDA just did a big punt and said, we're ignoring it. And for their purpose, yeah, I think I would have too, because where you're coming up to the critical point here, it can swing either way on you. So they just chose to stand back. So the S&Ds, when you look at the numbers, they were good fundamentally, but we have other issues here now that we have to deal with that really can impact those and how they turn out in the end.
Quite often when we see these reports in the summertime, the swing is back to watching weather again, isn't it?
Well, it is, you know, and I think here, you know, this weekend we're going to have news about where we're at or where we stand as far as trade regarding China itself at this point. You know, once that comes to the background a little bit and we have some stability or insight into maybe where we're going with that, then we are going to turn around and look back to weather. But even weather, I see some things that tell me we've got a lot of uncertainty ahead. There's some talk we could even have maybe a mild El Nino coming by the very end of summer. So we'll have to see how it shakes out.
Back to that supply-demand report for just a moment. The wheat wasn't terribly unfriendly, was it, in terms of supplies?
Well, it really wasn't. You know, everybody was pretty comfortable with that. You know, the one thing that hasn't been done at the USDA level yet, they're going to change their world wheat S&D numbers here, and they're going to have another line right up at the top, and it's going to input world wheat excluding China. And the one thing we have to understand in those world wheat numbers, China actually holds over half the inventory of wheat in the world. And if you look at the world wheat structure outside of China, we've been steadily tightening the last 3 years, and it wouldn't take too much to start getting what I'll call not dangerously, but moderately tight.
Isn't that part of the contention of the Trump administration on this trade issue with China, that the Chinese hold so much of the world's surplus in their storehouses, whether it's wheat or some other crop?
Yeah, you know, that has been an impediment in the trade, you know, and the Chinese even, you know, they're trying to figure out how to work out of it. You know, first they took on cotton. They worked those stocks down. Guess what? They're back being buyers of cotton around the world today because they're starting to see demand come in. Corn, they're working those gradually down. Wheat and rice are the two they really haven't chosen to tackle yet. And I think once they get the corn done, then they'll turn around and try to figure out how they try to tackle this surplus of wheat they have, whatever quality, whatever size it is, which we really don't know.
What do you tell your farmer clients? When a producer asks you, Dale, what should I be doing here? And many of these folks are driving down the same roads we are, looking at those crops. They're looking out their kitchen or farm office window and seeing crops that look better now than they have in a couple of years at this stage of the game. They see the direction the market has taken in recent days, moving down significantly from those peaks that were posted last month. What does the producer do now?
Right at the moment, this is what I call bloody tongue time. And by that, I mean bite your tongue so you don't do something stupid. You know, the markets got hit real hard here over the last few weeks, last couple of months in terms of beans. Don't really get caught up in this bearishness at this point, the emotion, because we've brought markets back down into reasonable price levels here. You know, we're at 360 on nearby corn futures. Beans, we're homing in on the $9 mark. And no matter how the Chinese trade thing shakes out, you know, we don't have the fundamental structure around the world to really justify markets going a lot lower than where we are now, nor for any significant period of time. So at least, and at a minimum, I think somewhere along the way, we'll have some weather issues come back into the fray again, and we'll see some opportunity to sell stuff at a higher price, a better price than today.
The emotion of these days of summer can be tough, can't it?
It swings an awful lot. There's no doubt about it. Years ago, we did a study, which is kind of interesting. I haven't updated it for a few years, but we found that there tends to be short-term changes in directions around the spring and summer holidays. We peaked out around Memorial Day. 4th of July is not far away. We going to bottom out right ahead of that? Maybe so.
I watch my Jack Russell Terriers as I play ball with them. They keep their eyes on the ball. That's why they are so good at it. You really have to do that as a marketer in agriculture, don't you?
You really do. You gotta look at the markets all the time, or at least, you know, on a frequent basis. Doesn't mean you need to do it every day, but you also have to have this resolve to try to keep from getting emotional about it. And that's really the hardest thing anybody has to accomplish. And it doesn't matter if you're a farmer marketing or a trader just trading the market. You got to keep your emotions under control, because that's when you make a lot of mistakes.
And that's probably the toughest thing to do, is to keep your emotions under control, because every day you look at those market prices and say, oops. Anyway, thanks to Max and thanks to Dale for that look at the market activity. We're at 5 minutes before 6 o'clock, and we're coming up to news time here on WGN Radio. The market story yesterday at the Board of Trade: sharply lower soybean prices at the Mercantile Exchange, sharply higher cattle prices and feeder cattle prices. As a matter of fact, some bargain buying came into the Merc yesterday and sent the June live cattle contract up $2.35 a hundredweight, and it ended the week at $108.45. The August feeder cattle contract up $4.27 a hundredweight, ended at $147.95. And then there's the grain market. Soybeans, because of the concern over the Chinese trade situation, the July soybean contract down 23 cents for the day, ended the day and the week at $9.25 a bushel. And the corn market, July corn down just half a cent, and the wheat market down just 1¾ cents at the end of the trading day yesterday. So anyway, it was an up and down day in the marketplace, and where will it be next week as we await the Monday crop progress reports and then the ongoing geopolitical situation? It'll be interesting because Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue and the Secretary of Agriculture for Canada took a ride on a lobster boat yesterday in Canada and talked about trade differences, I'm sure, but the secretary apparently pulled up some lobster traps and added to the lobster supply in the world. So it'll be interesting next week to watch those events. And we're out of time here, but we do appreciate your company. Thank you for joining us every week when we talk agriculture here on WGN Radio. Oh, and you can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado for details. Listen to Steve Cochran weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.